Traveling the Vortex.
It's a miracle,
miracle.
A true blue rabbit dick on a miracle come through.
Oh, oh, oh.
When I get a baby, I was going crazy till the miracle came through.
Oh, oh, oh.
Now you're here and my arms are around you. And baby, love it dancing in the street.
We join Captain Jack and his Torchwood team as they defend the Earth and arrived at episode number 174, where we also found the blessing. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys? Are you feeling blessed?
No.
No.
I feel blessed.
This seems like a very short week this week, doesn't it?
A little bit.
It feels like I was just here.
I know. Not that I don't like you guys, but I feel like we just did this.
I don't like you guys.
Thanks.
Sorry, Keith. I'm trying to push your computer off the table.
Well, what did you guys do this week?
Not a lot. We watched X-Men, X-Men United, on Thursday night. We had a pretty good showing for that.
Yeah, we did. Good turnout. I forgot how good that movie was.
It is a good movie.
It's good.
And I remember it. I remember it answering more questions about.
Okay, next.
I remember it delving more into Wolverine's backstory than I gave it more. Like, I guess I remembered more than what was actually there, and I extrapolated more than what was actually there.
I think what happens with that particular one is you forget how much was.
Because that's the reason why I've always said Origins was unnecessary.
Right, right. Well, that's just it. You forget that X-Men 2 has so much of that information because they basically flesh it out and expand on it in X-Men Origins. And so you kind of forget because you – so then suddenly the most recent thing is X-Men Origins, and you're going, okay, that's where all the backstory is. But no, there's a good chunk of that in X-Men, and you kind of forget that once you've seen X-Men Origins.
Well, see, no, it's the reverse for me, that I remembered more than what they actually gave us.
Oh, I see.
Even when they announced, we're going to do X-Men Origins Wolverine, it's a prequel, I thought, well, they covered all of that. I don't need anything else about Wolverine.
Yeah.
But rewatching it, there wasn't, knowing how they expanded it also, I think
that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Is that it,
you know that how it expands it more.
You maybe lose how much you learned here as opposed to here.
Yeah.
You know what, that's what I was trying to come across, is that you kind of forget that there was as much in X-Men 2 once you've watched X-Men Origins, which kind of rehashes that and expands on it.
So
you kind of forget how much X-Men 2 had really already fleshed a lot of that out.
Sean's nodding his head like he doesn't know
Sean
what we're talking
there.
About.
He watched X-Men 2 with us, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, you weren't there. Oh.
I've seen it just recently, actually. But I haven't seen X-Men Origins. So.
At all?
At all.
Ever?
Ever.
So you'll join us in 2 weeks for that?
Pending.
Do you own that one and yet not watch it?
Okay.
Well,
it's
you have so many DVDs.
I do have so many DVDs.
You would never watch.
It's encouraging that Keith told me he went in and picked up X-Men Origins at the library.
I'm not promising
anything. With anticipation of possibly watching it next week with us. Or
because
2 weeks from now.
I'm not promising anything because my sister comes into town next Saturday.
Ah, okay.
And so she's here for 2 weeks and I don't know what my weeks are going to be like.
Well,
so
if
I'm home,
come over and watch it with you. She could tweet along with us.
If it weren't so late at night, she probably would. I was this close to getting her to come to Friday Night Who.
Mm, really?
Yeah.
Which else? Let's see. What else did I do? A lot of getting stuff ready for our Grad Chill next weekend. So just pulling out all the old stuff, gathering up all the new stuff, getting ready to price everything, got everything set up in the garage. So I can't park my truck in the garage for a week.
I think I'm just going to borrow the price gun from work.
Can I? saw Saving Mr. Banks this weekend.
What'd you think?
Yeah, quite enjoyable movie.
It was a good movie.
Really, really liked it. And while I think Tom Hanks did a fantastic job, I don't think he sounds like Walt, but he has the mannerisms.
He's got the mannerisms, but yeah, he doesn't.
Are nailed. But Emma Thompson was phenomenal. Oh my gosh, she did so good. And of course, I don't know. I mean, I've read about P.L. Travers, but I didn't know that much about her. But she does
such a
phenomenal
actress.
Yeah, she does a phenomenal job just acting in this movie. Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti.
Fantastic.
No, I didn't know he was in it.
It's a small part.
Colin Farrell, who I rarely ever like in anything, absolutely loved him in this.
You don't like Colin Farrell?
No.
I don't like Colin Farrell.
Never really liked him that much in anything.
Am I remembering the right Colin?
The British, or the Irish Baker. Guy.
I know that.
And it's not Will Farrell.
No. Oh, there's the two Colins that I always confuse. The one from The King's Speech.
That's Colin Firth.
Okay.
Colin Farrell
is the action
is the
star.
Irish. Yeah, he's in a lot of action films. Yeah.
Including the new Total Recall.
Yeah, exactly. That's
Mission, not Mission Impossible.
I like him in really weird roles, like Seven Psychopaths. He was really good in that. And there's another one that I saw him in that I liked him in.
He was Bullseye in Daredevil.
I remember him as Bullseye in Daredevil, which I did not like, although I liked... I'm one of those few people that thought Daredevil was a fine movie. I mean, it wasn't great.
I liked it.
But I liked it. But I did not like him as Bullseye. I did not like the character of Bullseye.
I liked him when he was on Scrubs.
Scrubs.
Did you see that episode?
Yeah, I did. But yeah, quite an enjoyable movie. I highly recommend it for anybody, Disney files or non alike. And then what else did we do? I think that's pretty much it. There wasn't much, like we said, there wasn't much time to do anything. And I didn't do much this weekend. So other than garage sales stuff, I did start The Maze Runner. After Holly and I went and saw Divergent last weekend, there was a trailer on there for the movie that's coming out based on the book. And so I went out and bought the e-book from Barnes & Noble and downloaded it and started watching it, or listening to it, or...
Reading it?
Reading it. Too much media. Reading that one. But I may put that on hold this week since I'm going to try and read The Abominable Snowman novelization. That's it. Not much else. A lot of playing Doctor Who Legacy.
I watched a lot of Torchwood X-Men because I wasn't like you guys and continued on. I waited until after we recorded. So I crammed.
Oh, you had to cram a lot.
I crammed Torchwood in after X-Men, before Friday Night Who, after Friday Night Who, and then Saturday.
Oh, wow.
While I did laundry. Wow. And so I did a lot of running around.
That's a lot
stuff.
Of Torchwood!
I did a lot of Torchwood. Run around stuff. Cleaned off my desk. It's not a huge mound now. My every couple of month undertaking of clearing off all the mail. Because it gathers on the table where we record. So every Sunday, it all just goes over there and it just piles up.
And the pile gets bigger and bigger.
And so every couple of months, I have to go do that. I got it down even lower than normal.
Bills that he hasn't paid in 3 months because it's piled in and it's piled.
No, I remember to pay the bills. I almost don't need the paper versions.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're like me, you probably have everything digital. And so
yeah, I don't pay any paper except for rent. That's the only thing I pay it with a check.
I forget to pay them. I put them in a pile, move the pile, forget to pay it. It's like Portlandia, and they shut things off. It's like, oh, was that due? I should pay that.
That's about it, other than X-Men. Not much.
John?
Finished Miracle Day, finished Web of Lies.
Those kind of should go without saying.
Worked a lot.
Should
go without saying. Worked a lot. And... trying to think there was something else that we did, but
I had coffee with my dad. It was good to see him.
That was pretty much it.
Well, let's move on to news.
it was
a short week.
It was an anticlimactic week. Nothing happened.
I had so much last week. I had to write it all down. This week, I don't write anything down.
Well, it's kind of anticlimactic in news, too. There's not a lot there. 50 years of Doctor Who in comics is going to be celebrated at Lakes International Comic Art Festival. It's going to celebrate the comic strip form this year as part of its lineup of events. It's going to take place in various venues in Kendal, Cumbria.
Wherever
that is.
That sounds Welsh.
Probably.
Cumbria.
So that's kind of neat that they're celebrating that. There's a lot of different festival stuff. If you go, let us know and let us know what it's like. Also in comics, Titan has announced the companions for the Doctors.
Oh. All so we knew companions. They were doing two lines.
A 10th and 11th
Doctor. 10th and 11th. And which companions will they be traveling with?
Gabby and Alice, respectively.
Well, who the hell are they?
Brand new companions.
New companions.
Oh, new companions.
Yeah, introduced to... supplement. Which...
That's cool.
I think it's very cool. And
I think it's neat, yeah.
Not that I'm tired of Rose or Martha or Donna or anybody, and not that I wouldn't mind seeing more adventures of them in the comics, but it'll be kind of nice to get kind of a fresh perspective with different companions and the relation that those two particular doctors have with different companions outside of the ones we know. And what it does for me is it kind of gives me that what they've kind of done with Colin, with the Sixth Doctor, in both audio and print form by adding Evelyn and Frobisher and other, you know, companions that he's had times with. Same thing with the Eighth Doctor. You know, there's clearly companions that we didn't see on screen that it was a necessity for him, but with the Sixth Doctor, who I suppose it was somewhat of a necessity since he had a bit of a truncated run himself, it's refreshing to see some new adventures with people we don't know and how that relationship develops, and I think that's a neat idea to do with 10 and 11 as well.
And it also gives a little bit more ethnicity to the companions. One is African-American and one is Spanish.
Ah.
So.
Spanish or?
I will get there.
Okay.
Joining the 11th Doctor, Alice meets the Doctor in an unfortunate circumstance and the grief at the death of her mother. Her adventures with the Doctor seemingly set between the events of Series 5 and 6, judging by the BBC's comments of the comics being in the wake of the second Big Bang.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how that's going to work, since he takes Amy and Rory with him at the end of Season 5.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see. They'll go through time and space, etc., etc., blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, joining the Tenth Doctor, set during the specials year after Series 4, will be New Yorker Gabriela Gonzalez. Working in her parents' laundromat, Gabby meets the Doctor during the celebrations for Day of the Dead. Gibbering on about psychic aliens, the Doctor's arrival lets Gabby go on an adventure she's always dreamt of. And that's going to be a starting 5-issue arc.
Hmm.
So it does not specify.
Well, I'm excited for those.
Hispanic, I guess, not Spanish.
Not necessarily.
She met the Doctor while he was on holiday.
Yep.
In Spain.
In Spain. I'm excited. I was kind of lukewarm when they announced, new Doctor Who comics. I was like, okay, cool. Always cool for doing Doctor Who comics. Oh, it's going to be 10th and 11th. It's kind of like, okay.
There's some new information
but
I didn't
now,
know about
now,
this now.
I'm a little more jazzed.
We have a date, July 23rd. I didn't know if we knew that before.
And we knew July.
We knew July. We didn't know the date.
July 23rd now. And we kind of wondered, there will be a third series featuring Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor later this year.
All right.
So we will get 12.
So we're going to get 10, 11, and 12 running concurrently.
Yeah, three different lines of comics.
Cool.
That's pretty impressive.
That sounds expensive.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll alternate, like if they'll do a 10, 11, and a 12, and a 10, and 11, and a 12.
I don't think they've done with Big Finish Audio.
Monthly, or if it'll just be...
I think it'd be too hard.
Boom, here.
Well...
Knowing comic books the way I know comic books, they'll all come out in the same month.
Yeah.
It'll all be.
It may not be the same week.
Yeah, that's just it.
Yeah, it may not be the same week.
If they're smart, they would spread it out so you have every other week.
And a paycheck between each.
Yeah. So I want to say the Buffy and Angel comic did that when it started. But they were also different publishers.
Well, IDW was releasing some of the classic Doctor stuff alongside... the 11th Doctor.
Yeah,
stuff.
And they did it in
and it was
alternating
weeks.
Yeah. Because they want to make sure that people know what's new and what's old,
right.
Etc. We reported yesterday about the. Or last. Yesterday.
Was it yesterday?
Seems like it.
Nearly yesterday.
Last week about Hugo Awards nominations. This week we got some news about BAFTAs and Craft Awards were given out. Doctor Who, Day of the Doctor, won. Best visual or special visual and graphic effects in 2014.
Yeah.
And An Adventure in Space and Time won makeup and hair design in 2014.
Yeah.
What?
It beat out
Burton. I'm glad they got something. It's just
there was
hair
a lot of
makeup.
There was a lot of beehives in that.
Well, and I'll tell you what was most impressive. How they made up that one guy, that one actor that looked exactly like Matt Smith.
That was really impressive.
Because
that guy was bald.
I don't recognize the names that of things.
What, Matt Smith? You should recognize him. He's been around for a while.
You've forgotten him already? Gosh, that's just, that's mean.
Of the items Doctor Who beat out, but Adventure in Space and Time beat out Burton and Taylor, Da Vinci's Demons.
Burton and Ernie?
No, Burton and Taylor. It's about Liz and...
Is that the one with What's-Her-Face in it?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, What's-Her-Face.
Lindsay Lohan?
That's my many years of...
Is that the Lindsay Lohan
Yeah,
one?
Maybe.
Many years of working in a video store. Hey, do you have that movie with that guy? I don't remember the name of the movie, but it's What's-His-Face and that one girl from that other movie that was kind of the same.
Nope, that's the Dominic West, Helena Bonham Carter.
That's the one, yeah. Days of Thunder is the one you're looking
yes,
for.
Yes, that's it. Oh, I can't count. I have a nickel for every time I had somebody come in and ask a question like that. I'd have a few nickels.
A few nickels. At least 10 cents. And then finally in news, because
I don't know
anything
about this, and I was going to ask you when you brought it up in the pre-show, and I thought, no, I'm going to wait and find out what this is.
Apparently in a recent interview, or I guess at a con, Billy Piper was at, she said she'd be up for a spinoff featuring Rose Tyler and the Metacrisis 10th Doctor. She said, quote, that would be interesting. I'd be game. She said that at the recent Awesome Con panel when a fan posed a question to her.
No.
I agree. No.
No. Just no.
Let it go, people. I
really don't care how interested you are.
Let it go.
No. You can have that, fans, you can have that for your fanfic.
Fiction? Yeah,
just go right ahead. We don't need a TV spinoff. No.
She did continue to go on and later and address some issue fans had with Day of the Doctor and the fact that she was the moment rather than Rose. And she said, quote, I've heard a lot of that. Parentheses fans saying, why can't you just be Rose and actually see the 10th Doctor and be with him? And she continues, I think to come back and do something slightly different was welcome for me because I'd come back so many times that even though I loved Rose, I thought I probably needed a bit of a shift. That's what Stephen Moffat wanted. He wanted something very different. She adds, quote, it's good to watch it, and I wish they could have somehow connected in the way they used to instead of being totally satisfied. I really enjoyed playing it because I could be a bit mad and a bit strange.
I thought it was perfect. So,
however, Piper admits that she found playing the moment hard to get her head around. It was quite a confusing episode, I thought. When I read the script, I was like, what? I got it in the end with the help of David, though.
That's one of those conversations I would love to see. Is just something behind the scenes where, you know, the person who's in the show is sitting there and there's David Tennant in the outfit going, okay, so it's like this, and he proceeds to explain the timey-wimey-ness of how this is going back and forth, and the other person's nodding their head. I mean, I can imagine this probably happened to John Hurt as well. That maybe he didn't care. Maybe he just learned the lines and showed up, but he commented that it was a difficult role.
He said, no, it's okay. I'll just be John Hurt.
I'll just be John Hurt.
That's all it needed.
But I wonder if there are people that are like, oh, and then this happens, you know, and have to explain to their co-stars that this is how this works on the show. I think that would be fun.
All right, well, if there's nothing else, let's move on to feedback.
That's it on news. Sorry, I had to go get my power.
I've got the power.
First in feedback is Chrissy. Chrissy writes.
Sorry, Chrissy.
Greetings from the number one nerd state.
Behind the scenes technical stuff going on here.
Are you sure you got it? Are you happy with it?
I'm good.
You're good. Okay.
Dear Vortex Boys, everyone saw that article, right? Actually, most of our...
Which?
The greetings from the number one nerd state.
Oh, the number one nerd state. Okay, yes, I saw that article.
Actually, most of our states did pretty well in the rankings, except for Georgia. Sorry, Brenda, we still love you, and you are awesome singing. But it's cool that Utah made the number one slot. Hey, when you stick a bunch of incredibly creative people out in the desert and just ignore us, don't be surprised when something like this happens. Interesting enough, Utah is ranked number two for Doctor Who fandom, only beat out by Wyoming.
Which is weird that Wyoming of all states, it's the number one state for Doctor Who.
All six fans. Of them.
Yeah. Well, it's per capita. That's how they
that's
won.
That's how they won.
Yep.
Wait, maybe the cows are fans.
Okay,
there are cows in Wyoming.
There are cows and beets. There's beets.
Oh, we're 12th.
There's beets
in Wyoming, and I'll tell you how I know that.
Vegetable
when
beets?
I was in college, I was a criminal justice major.
Was
at
this
one
before
point.
Or after the breakdancing?
After breakdancing.
Okay.
I was a criminal
you're
justice
have to start
major.
Start labeling all your stuff A, B.
I've led an interesting life. I was a reserve police officer for a while, and I was.
Were you really?
Yes, I was. And
did you
I
know
was,
that?
Yeah.
You suck.
And I was. I was
I hear
a criminal
more of these
justice.
I work with them.
That's true. I was a criminal justice major, and I was part of the on-campus criminal justice club. We had a club, yeah. And and we went up to Wyoming for a competition. And competition is basically you compete against others in firearms and forensics and all these different things. Traffic stops. Anyway, so
in Wyoming.
Yeah, in Wyoming. We Torrington, Wyoming. And we drove because we went from Liberal, Kansas, which is way down in the southwest corner of the state, for anybody that doesn't know. And we drove all the way across the state through Nebraska into Wyoming. And it was smooth sailing till we got to Wyoming and got behind, and it was harvest time, and we got behind every beet truck in the state. And it took us 2 hours to get what would have been normally a half hour trek from the border of Wyoming to Torrington, which isn't too far into Wyoming. Beets. Everywhere. Big mounds of them in the backs of trucks. That's how I know that there are beets in Wyoming. I had no idea until that time. Now that I've bored everybody with that story,
They got to come from somewhere, I guess.
I am interested and flabbergasted at the same time.
About the beets or the fact that I was a cop?
Both, actually.
I thought you knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was a cop for about a year.
You're just a fountain of unknown springs that bubble to the surface.
I'll expound on that. I was a cop in Oklahoma while I was living in Kansas. I lived in Liberal, Kansas, which was 3 hours from the border.
Right.
Tyrone,
commuted
Oklahoma.
That.
Tyrone, Oklahoma, which was only 5 miles away, was 2 miles inside the border of Oklahoma. Yeah, I commuted 5 miles. Literally from my house, it was 5 miles because I lived on the south edge of town. You drove 3 miles to the border and 2 more miles into Tyrone. And I was a police officer in Tyrone, Oklahoma for 1 year while I was in school.
I didn't know that.
It's the truth.
They licensed you a firearm.
They did. I had a certification. Wasn't really a license, but it was a certification.
Well, what makes it different?
Well, they didn't have licenses. you just had to be certified in firearms to be able to be proficient. And
I got my hunter safety card.
Well,
No.
It's more of you had to have a proficiency. You had to go to the gun range. You had to maintain practice. You had to maintain practice with your firearm to continue to be certified or maintain your certification. I actually had there's like several levels, well, back then, we're talking 30 years ago, people. Back then, there were, or less than 30, 25 years ago. Back then, you had to have, there were certain levels of certification. Just to have a gun, you didn't have to be certified. But to have a gun and as like a security guard, you had to have another certification. Police officers had to have a more stringent certification, fortunately. And so I had to go through that. So it was a step up. Very high. Plus,
still,
I was in school, and it counted toward an internship and all kinds of credit. And I'm not certified anymore.
You're not. You know.
Once I decided not to do that.
do you ever miss just the shooting aspect of
no,
it?
Or, not at all. No, I don't even like guns now.
My grandpa took me shooting a couple different times, and I enjoyed it. I shot his .22, which I enjoyed a lot. And then he let me shoot the 9mm once, and it scared me, and I didn't like that one so much. You always see in the movies people run around with the Mel Gibson. No, because I had the whole stance and proper instruction and everything, and that thing kicked hard enough that, yeah.
I carried a 36 revolver, so it doesn't have a lot of kick.
Yeah. Interesting. I did not know that.
Shot with a 9mm, but, I mean, on the range, because you had to be proficient.
Right,
with,
yeah.
Revolvers and semi-automatics, but actually, I went to when I went to that competition in Torrington.
Did you shoot beets?
No, didn't shoot beets.
That'd make good.
Interestingly
targets.
Enough,
stand them up on
the everybody that went wanted the 9mm because it's I think it was 12 rounds, And when you switched, it was just a cartridge. But you were only required to do 12 rounds for each wave or round of shooting. So you did 12, and then you turned around and did 12 more, and then you did 12 more. So you had three rounds of 12 bullets. And everybody wanted the 9mm because you also had a certain amount of time that you had to unload those. And as you know, the 9mm just has that kick straight back, whereas the revolver kicks up.
Right.
All right. So everybody was amazed that everybody else wanted to use a 9, and me and one other guy, in fact, the guy that was the police chief in Tyrone, we used the 36, the revolver. And you have to, because you're doing 12 rounds, you have to change your revolver in the middle. You have to unload, or kick the casings out, put the new one in, and you've got that little six spindle thing that you put
slide in them all in at the same
slides
time.
Slides all in at the same time. They were amazed that we wanted to do that. You know, now this wasn't the best of everybody. You know who the best two guys on our team ended up being?
Two of you.
It was the two of us. And I think part of that is because that's what we carried. And so we were always firing with those. And plus, because we had to remain certified, we had to do more than what we did in class. And those were the guns that we were using. So we were actually more proficient with that than we would have been the 9mm because we were used to the 36s. So
interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Again, sorry, probably bored our listeners and hijacked Chrissy's email, but there's a little bit of trivia that you didn't know about.
I think this list is unfair to Washington, D.C., that they even included it on the list. Since it's per capita, yeah, of course Washington, D.C. is going to be at the bottom.
Do we know that it is
there's
per capita?
There's not as many people.
It is per capita.
It does say per capita. See, I was assuming it was per capita, but which I think is why Wyoming outranks everybody, because it's easier to have a small group of people. I mean, we were the highest crime rate for a while, but that was per capita. So there might have been more crime in New York or Washington or Detroit, for that matter. But Topeka, unfortunately, because we had fewer people but more crime. I mean, it still does. It does weigh heavy because of the fact that you have to take the sample of people that you have. But it wasn't like we might have had 17 shootings. Washington might have had 20, but we had more because we had fewer people. So the same thing happens here. You got more Doctor Who fans because there's fewer people.
Which Doctor Who is the highest ranking Kansas got?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
Number 9, I think we were ranked on
eight.
For eight for Doctor Who, which surprised me.
Yeah,
although it shouldn't because we've got the Whovians of Kansas
or Wichita,
and we've got the Kansas City Time Lords, and now we've got a Lawrence. Well, we've got a Lawrence and Topeka following. Yeah. You know, we've got a lot of people on the Facebook page that Chris created. So there's a lot of us around here now. We're connecting.
Well, and I think more people are just Who fans in general.
Well, I think so, too. The resurgence of the show.
Especially
is
around the 50th, too.
Yeah. It's a good time.
It is
a good time.
Okay, she continues. This is a short
email. Wait, did Chrissy write more?
No. I'm off to visit my new baby nephew this weekend.
Aww.
Oh, we saw pictures, by the way. Yeah, on Instagram.
He's a cutie patootie.
He's adorable.
Cute. But I have to apologize for the bad quality of the audio in my fan extra port. I have no idea what happened. I tested some short recordings before I started to make sure everything was working right, but for some reason my longer recording went weird. I should have checked before I sent it in. So sorry about that.
My apologies too. When I got it, it sounded very, the best I can describe is tinny. And I took it into Audacity and tweaked it a little bit and got it to the quality that it was now. I don't think it was bad. It wasn't even bad when I got it. I just knew I could clean it up a little more. So, Chrissy, I don't think it was that bad.
I don't think it was that bad either.
There are points where it gets a little overmodulated, which I had to try to fix, but I just couldn't because of the recording itself. But I didn't think it was bad. It was certainly listenable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't have put it out if it was poor quality. So it was. I thought it was sufficient.
It sounded better than somebody on the phone.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it sounded better than when Sean called from Hawaii.
Sounded better than some of our early shows.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
That's certainly true. No, it wasn't bad at all, so I don't think you need to apologize.
She continues with, don't have much else to say since I don't watch Torchwood, but I am excited for the fifth Doctor month that is coming up. But then I get to suffer through the Caves of Adrazani. Not that it's a bad story. Far from it. But the death of your Doctor is just tough.
And Fivey's death. Spoilers!
And Fivey's death story is tougher than most. Thanks a bunch, guys. At least you didn't schedule it over my birthday, so I have to give you credit there. Have a lovely week. Chrissy.
Thank you, Chrissy.
Thank you, Chrissy.
And we also got some audio feedback, so let's take a listen to that.
All right.
Hello, this is Eric from Hillsborough, North Carolina. I just want to let you guys know how much I've enjoyed listening to you guys in the last couple months. I learned about your podcast from the interview with Lee Cummings of Tiny Rebel Games, because I'm pretty active on the Facebook page for Doctor Who Legacy, and I've been spending a lot of time, or at least passing the time while doing mindless tasks, listening through a good number of your podcasts, mostly focusing on the new Who episodes, because those are more fresh in my not mind, especially since I had to speed through all of Matt Smith's run, aside from the last two, unfortunately, in the last, or since January, as well as a bit of Tenet. But yeah, I've had a great time listening to your analysis. It's been really frustrating because of several times I've wanted to comment on things you've said, but I know that it's been years since you said them. But like you guys, or at least Glenn and Sean, I am a classic Who fan. I did a watch back in the early 90s. Unfortunately, it wasn't until after the show got canceled that I actually got into it. For a while, I had been wanting to, but thinking, oh, I need to wait till it gets to the beginning on my local PBS affiliate. And, of course, that would never happen. It turned out that all they ever showed was Tom Baker and later. Both excited and astounded at the fact that you're only now, or at least in a month or so, getting to Caves of Adrazani. That's such a phenomenal story. And Davison was my doctor. Hi, Chrissy. And I will definitely be giving you some feedback when it's time for you to do that episode. Other than that, great job. But I just remembered that Sean was saying some things about Doctor Who Legacy, and I only listened to the beginning of the most recent podcast because I haven't gotten that far in Torchwood. But I knew you guys were going to be commenting on Legacy. John, you were saying that you didn't think you can play with fewer than three or four colors in Doctor Who Legacy. I have to tell you, you're wrong. I rarely go above two colors, but you have to do is you have to make sure that the colors that you have are the ones that are strongest against the colors that it says are going to be in the level, unless it's, of course, like some of the weird ones in Season 5, like the Bubble Universe or the Toclafane levels. And you make sure you have converters in your team. My blue team, for a long time, which has worked phenomenally against red, because that's what I would play it against, was kind of the team of imposters and rejects. It was 11, the two fake 11s, the Flesh Clone and the Spoonhead, Angie Maitland, Sam Garner, and the Blue Adipose. And every turn, after you get through the power up the abilities the first time when they're all maxed out, or at least rank 4, every turn you're converting a color into blue. You have plenty of blue gems. You don't do it all at once. You just do one per turn, unless it's Angie, when you turn the yellows into pinks. You're clearing away half the board every turn, just about. And you will get plenty and plenty of high-powered combos. Just make sure you've got converters, and you're playing to the weaknesses of the enemies. Well, that's about all I've got to say. Oh, and if you haven't checked it out yet, check out the Atmos TV's YouTube video about beating the third season 5 level with the Toclofane. That's about it. I'll be chiming back in probably with email in a few weeks for Caves of Eldrazani. Until then, bye.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's great hearing from new listeners.
I'm glad we've got a new listener, and I'm going to do a little behind-the-scenes secret here. You won't have noticed that, listening listener, but it did cut him off in the middle, but I was able to seam it back together, so it was one good. Something we should warn people about is that if you do call the Google Voice line, there's a 3-minute limit.
Yeah.
But fortunately, he picked right up where he had left off, so he got all that in. So terrific. It's great to hear from you.
And that's an interesting tactic. I guess that I'm just not far enough along, because I think the highest any of my players are at the moment is a 3-star character.
See, I don't think I have any of the lower tier other than the main characters that I normally play with leveled up high enough to do that with.
I have some of them. In fact, I've got Sam, and I don't remember what his name is, that turns... I think it's pink to blue, I think is what he's referring to.
Sam does green to blue.
Green to blue, that's what it is. I'm going to take that suggestion and go in and build a team around Eric's suggestion and see if I have a little better time on some of those, because that's what I've been struggling with, is that I just tend to spend, and I do, I'll bring colors in there that are more powerful against colors that of the enemy that are playing as well. But I think that that's actually a good suggestion, the way he's device building that team, and I think that might help me on a couple of levels that I'm having struggles on. I haven't got to a point where I'm just completely stuck yet. Again, I did for a while, but I am going back occasionally, going back and trying to do the character drops.
Oh, yeah.
And those are the ones that I tend to sometimes hit or miss. So those it might help on one or two of those that I've been trying to work on.
I was able to get past the Toclofane level.
I did too.
But I did use a time crystal.
Then
I got it, one drop for me in the level, so it's like I didn't lose one.
Yeah, I've had actually 3 crystals drop in this season so far.
And so I think I only went one level. I've only completed one level past that. So
I was telling Keith, I've been still kind of gearing up myself before launching into 5. I want to kind of ramp some of my guys up, because I've noticed with that increase in difficulty, it doesn't seem like I'm quite ready yet to go in there. And like you, I jumped into an expert level just to see, you know. so much. And then found out that apparently I still hadn't unlocked everybody from Season 7. I had one character left. Not a character, but a costume.
Oh, a costume.
For the Doctor. And I was like, well, this will not work. So I had to go back.
This shall not stand.
I finally got him today, as a matter of fact. So now I can focus on Season 6 and get the rest of the people that I don't have yet. So I'm really looking forward to summer when I don't have school all the time.
And I can, Doctor Who Legacy all summer.
I can just watch movies and play, and, you know, it's going to be like the old days.
Well, again, welcome, Eric. And if you're going back and catching up, then bear with us in some of the rough spots.
And if you want to comment on the things we said back then,
yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Just make sure you include what we said.
We may not remember it, so you'll have to refresh us. But
or we may blatantly disagree with it. No, we never said that.
We would have never have said that.
That's me more than you guys. I don't know what you're talking about.
You know how Glenn doesn't like anthropomorphized characters? And you'll go, I love anthropomorphized characters. I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, probably will never ever dispute that.
And bagpipes. I love bagpipes.
Up next in feedback is Holly.
And Holly writes, last 5 episodes of Torchwood Miracle Day and Web of Lies. Hi guys, great last podcast. When I saw the title of last week's podcast, I was wondering if Mike the Mechanic's All I Need is a Miracle was going to be the opening music. And when I heard the opening chords, I was grinning from ear to ear. Chrissy, I enjoyed your recap of the FanX experience. On to reviews. Once again, I apologize to whoever reads this email. Another long one, and I don't think I rhymed a sentence. Episode 6, Middlemen. I have to say they're sure pulling quite the guest cast. Thanks, stars. Ernie Hudson, wow. I'm thinking that... why? Found out... Help me out here. Thinking that Y found out too much? Was that his name?
Found out and got the suggestion. Oh, Way.
Way.
I think his the Oriental assistant that he.
Oh, right, right. Okay. I'm thinking that Wei found out too much and got the suggestion to jump. Colin Maloney, wow, talk about a very nervous guy. He doesn't want anyone nosing around the government's business at this base. Like Glenn, I didn't like him much at all when he first stepped on the screen. Slight tangent. The actor usually kind of gets these sort of roles. I've known the actor as the character of Conrad Eckley in the main CSI franchise, and when his character first got introduced, he was quite a jerk to Grissom and crew. Over the course of the years, he's gotten better, but still, end of tangent.
He was also a really bad guy on Lost.
That's where I recognized him from. Oh my gosh, I completely forgot.
And there was a couple other things I was going to pull up.
And he's that same type of character. He is. Oh, I totally forgot about that. Wow. She goes on to write, poor Vera, and once Rex finds out that Maloney was behind her death, he's in big time trouble. Near the end, when Maloney was about to really put the hurt on Esther, I was never so glad to see Matheson in my life to rescue both Rex and Esther. I really agree with you guys from last week that Masterson really didn't do all that much except be there to lose his gun to Mahoney so he could shoot Vera. I think Reese may have slipped up using Jack's name for his clearance to move Gwen's dad. Remind me of the very first episode of Torchwood Series 1 with Owen ordering Jubilee Pizza under the name of Torchwood. At least they got out okay. Was it Owen that ordered it? I thought it was Yanto that ordered the pizza under...
It was Yanto,
I think it was Yanto. Episode 7, Immortal Sins. We find out more about Jack's backstory, and I can't say I don't blame Glenn for being ticked off at Jack for him not remembering what he could have done in the past to put them in this situation. I mean, the 456 come springing to mind instantly. Angelo that's a good point.
That is Jack a good point.
And he didn't let on about that either until... It was too, Jack, you've got a pattern here. 456. 456.
456.
Angelo Calisanto was an interesting character, though I really didn't care for him all that much. Sure, he wants to learn more about Jack's secrets, but I really think he's just trying to use that to get ahead in life. I was cheering at the end of the episode when Esther and Rex come as the cavalry to save Jack and Gwen from Commander Kira. Olivia Colasanto.
Stunt casting!
Episode 8, Into the Road. Things are really starting to heat up. Shapiro, no other than John Q. Delancey, shows up. Friedkin doesn't stay around... too long. Yippee. Too bad that he took out Olivia... I'm saying this right. Colasanto, right?
Colasanto.
Yeah, okay. Took out Olivia Colasanto in the process. We also learned that Danes is classified as Category 0, whatever the heck that means. Episode 9, The Gathering. Not too bad of an episode. We can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. Not really too much to say about this one, just that we're finally getting some answers. Episode 10, The Bloodline. Talk about an ending. Leave it to Reese to be the one to find the obvious answer to where the blessing would be located. I didn't see the twist with Esther transfusing Jack's blood into Rex's body until the reveal. I was really hoping that Esther would have survived, but then again, this is Torchwood. Glad that Charlotte got what she deserved. Jilly's still working for the family even after all that they did. I would have gone running for the hills. I think I would have too.
Yeah.
Loved Rex's reaction to... Oh, and Jack's to the fact that Rex came back to life after being shot by Charlotte. They have left it open for a return if they do decide to do another series of Torchwood. I really wonder what the family's plan B is. If this whole miracle day was a trial run, it makes me wonder what they have up their sleeves. Web of Lies. An interesting webcomic. Preface it with a missing day, or is it a year? Not quite sure. All I know is that in the first part, it's got to be early in the Torchwood days because Gwen mentions Tosh, and if she's managed to get a track on Jack. Overall, a pretty interesting story, but it was still kind of hard to make out if the blood that they blew up in the building was Jack's or something else was modified with Jack's blood, and then Gwen and Jack were made to forget. The animation wasn't too bad, but there were times when the action was a little hard to follow because of the animation. I'll wrap it up here. Looking forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on these episodes. Holly from Wisconsin. Thank you,
Holly. Thank you, Holly.
Thank you, Holly.
We will discuss some of those points as well. Well, should we move into our review of part two of...
Part two.
Miracle Day. No synopsis.
No synopsis.
We're not going to read the second half of the back of the DVD.
Well, I didn't read the first half.
I'm giving people notice that we're not going to do it either this week.
One day, nobody dies. And the next. And the next. All right.
Who wants to start?
Let us have it, Glenn.
I like Ernie Hudson's character.
It was stunt casting, but it's
a weird bit of stunt casting. And this is the one character that gets thrown in here that I wanted more about, but it's framed in such a way that it's really, this is the best way to give the information, because I think we're kind of hinted to the fact, even at the beginning, that he's not in line with what's going on. In fact, he's quite surprised by what's going on.
Well, yeah.
So, being that mid-level boss, to quote the analogy that Sean had last week, it's almost that, the character's not misdirection, he's not misdirection, but the story gives us a little bit of misdirection, because it's almost like we're going to get some answers now, and then find out that he really doesn't have much to give, except for those little nuggets like the blessing, and the fact that it's geography-based. Well, it could be geometry, too. But geographically based. And so we get those little nuggets after the long conversation between him and Jack. But the way they get there is kind of neat. So I was quite okay with that going on there. And Ernie Hudson, I'm with you. Like you said last week, I'm just discovering that he's just a really good actor. And for such a small part where all he is just somebody giving information about what's going on, he executes it wonderfully.
Yeah.
I mean, he really engages you and makes you interested in what he's saying and what he has discovered, and what he doesn't know and what he does know. And it's like, oh,
he's
see you in more stuff.
Exactly. He's just interesting enough to be very real, you know, when he's joking with him about, you think I'm the devil in a three-piece suit.
That's it.
And I'm not. I'm a schmuck. I sit at my desk and I'm trying to find out what's going on the same as you are. And you buy into it. And unlike some of those, you know, villainous roles where they set this person up and then they go, well, I'm not that bad a guy. I could be this. And you're like, nah. It's Ernie Hudson.
Believe him.
You're just a schmuck. All right. Yep.
I think that's partially why the stunt casting works so well, is because of the actor, and he does it so well. If it was a faceless guy, we still would be kind of like, I think you're so bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this also the episode where Jilly gets Oswald the... girl.
I believe that's the end of the episode.
It was at the end of this episode. Yeah, that's what I thought. That was another thing that I think, coming off of episodes 5 and 6, which I didn't think were stellar.
Well, this is 6 we're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. Coming off of 4 and 5, this one I didn't think was that, or this one I thought was better coming off of those, because it feels like now we're starting to get some information. The other thing that I liked about this, if I'm remembering this right...
I think that's a later episode.
Okay, well, even if it is, what I I'll talk about that, because we didn't stick to the episodes last week. But what I liked about that is it also builds on Oswald's character, because he wants this girl, and Jilly has this impression that, well, he just wants, you know, a prostitute, somebody to, you know, bed for the night. And when she comes in there... And she's like, okay, I can do this or this or whatever you want, blah, blah. And she's, you know, expecting to do what her job is. And he just wants to have, you know, a drink. Can we sit down and talk? Can I have a drink? And it really, it almost tries to build some of that compassion for despite what's happened, despite what's going on, he's trying to get some normalcy in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really powerful to kind of show us that, despite the fact that he's this monster, despite the fact that he's very manipulative and he's doing basically Ficor's bidding, it also shows you that he's trying to find those little pieces of normalcy, even though he's this, you know, horrible guy.
I don't even think it was so much... They played it off like you want a date.
Right.
And that's after... Okay, the sex apparently is not on the table. It's this. And they kind of played it off that way. I don't even think it was date so much. It's just that he wanted some human connection, somebody to interact with.
I agree.
That he hasn't had. He's been in solitary confinement. You know, he's out now, and he's trying to find just that level of connection.
Well, and it's probably something that even before he was in jail, he probably was one of those guys that you probably couldn't get a date.
Yeah.
Now that he's got he's recognized, he's got some celebrity, he's got some pull now. Now the vehicle to get the girl into the room is there, but he still has to execute the date, the conversation and whatnot.
Right.
And unfortunately for him, not unfortunately, but unfortunately for him, he's shut down because she's like, you know, I'll do sex, but I'm not going to do this because you're deplorable. I don't like what you did, and really shuts him down. And so it almost is there to kind of give you a little more compassion for Oswald, for this monster, to make you feel a little bad for him at this point as well, which I think they did well in the writing.
Yeah.
Which, and I like the
wonderful manipulation.
Yeah.
They set up the whole category zero of these are people that we need to kill. And I felt like they didn't go anywhere with it.
I never really even got the idea that category zeros, or these are people we got to kill, because we've already got that with category ones.
Well,
but category zero,
they
still had this mystery
was,
that they didn't.
They kind of established it was a...
Okay, I guessed these, that's what it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, you extrapolated the idea that these were people that we need to sentence to death because of the horrific things they've done.
Despite, as opposed to category ones,
which got there medically.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah.
Or even maybe not necessarily the horrible things they've done, but it as they've kind of been alluding to through the build-up to this, is that nobody should have the power to decide who lives and who dies.
Right.
Category zero allows you to have that. Because medically, okay, a category one is somebody who has no function.
Yeah.
Or very little. And
well, it's almost a mercy killing.
It's how they're looking at it. But category zero is somebody who is functioning, somebody who can operate in society, can do this, but they're going to start with the prisoners, the people on death row, the people that maybe, you know, we just can't seem to, you know, we don't like it. But then how long is it before you start to broaden that category to, you looked at me funny in the elevator, you're category zero now. And it allows them to consolidate their hold on.
And it's a great idea that they didn't really explore at all.
Yeah.
It's not a great idea. It's a horrific idea, but they also didn't explore it.
It's an interesting idea.
I think though, what is done there is the idea, and this, I think the payoff is at the end, when you learn that families are the ones that are, they've started this essentially just to reshape the world, to reshape society,
so they're
to make it, yeah, to make it so that they, well, they look at it as making it better, that everything is out of control, that there's chaos, that the structure doesn't work, the system doesn't work, and they're going to step in and make it better because they're trying to glorify or make right what they're doing.
They justify it.
And so I think what that does is it lends to that idea later that they drop, that we're basically going to make the system work better. And I think that's the idea they're trying to plant there. So I think that's why they don't go any further with it, because I think that was meant to satisfy that. Now, did it satisfy it adequately? I don't know.
I
think that's where they were going.
I have a hard time with the 2-month jump.
That's a little shocking.
Like, I'm torn about it because it made sense, but it was so abrupt that it was like, wait, there was a whole bunch of stuff left unresolved that we're just picking up later, and then really not
like
even
Jack
picking up.
Was shot.
Yeah, I mean, we eventually discover things, but it's like, really, you're just gonna.
It almost felt like that same season 3 Battlestar Galactica 1 year later.
What? For real?
Yeah.
So
it does.
The problem that I had with episode 6 is that we get those moments that we just talked about that I think work for it, but then you get a whole bunch of the let's get out of the camp because we're still dealing with
Rex is still
you know, so we've just watched Vera die, boom, leftover cliffhanger, and now we have to get out. So we've got all this running through corridors, basically trying to get out of the camp, and then getting captured, and then escaping, and then get, you know, that all that kind of stuff, and
Well,
this is the part where I found myself going, get on with it. We hurry up and move on, mm-hmm. you know.
I forgot about that, that was part of this. That kind of dragged, I think, things down as well.
You know, and then Esther gets... yeah. I was glad to see that when because, you know, it's been a while since we'd seen this, since we're watching it, and Colin attacks Esther, and Esther's flailing about trying to fight back, and Mel's kind of laughing to herself going, ain't no way. She's so toast. You know, Esther runs a desk. Esther does it. And I was really happy to see Esther, you know, turn the tables on him and actually get him. It was a good moment. And then, you know, she gets to Rex and he's like, you got to go back and get the keys. And it's like, ugh, okay. And she didn't want to do it, but she did it. It's like, okay, I understand the trauma here we're going for and all this kind of stuff. And then he did the classic Die Hard, oh, the villain came back moment, and proceeded to, oh, you may be toast at this point. Mm-hmm. And then our worthless character shows up to save them.
Yeah. I'm glad they gave the character some redemption, but I don't think you needed that at all.
They could have done away with a lot of that storyline in general.
I agree. I that's the part. I mean, as horrific as the camps were and are, As the story progresses, that the threat is still there, that it's still an ongoing thing even after the 2-month jump. It's still like, oh, that's too much time wasted here.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And there's so much later on of, we gotta save my dad, we gotta save my dad so we can kill my dad. What? Because they're trying to keep him from the furnace,
right,
so they can reset the miracle so he'll die naturally.
I would prefer that myself.
Well, yeah, it just seems kind of like, but you're fighting against yourself at that point.
No, because I don't think anybody deserves to be sent to a furnace because they think they're going to die. Because fundamentally, the principle of that is wrong. And so I think that the natural death is
reaction
what needs to happen.
To it isn't
not to mention
reaction. Though.
Not to mention when they're going to send him to the furnace, they do a quick goodbye and shipped him off. Nobody's there when he dies. I think it's more important for family to be around when he does. And that's what I like, that moment there towards the end when Reese goes to visit him and he goes and he's able to sit by his side when he does pass on. It's unfortunate that the mom doesn't get to be there, but it was nice that Reese was there. And that was another thing that it really... I'm skipping ahead here, but what really tugged at my heartstrings is the fact that Andy, when he's told that girl has nobody,
that
and that
nice.
She's, you know, there's, and he goes over and sets with her, and I thought that what a wonderful moment, what a beautiful moment for that character, and to really make me like that character even more.
Andy's kind of the unsung hero. From day one, he's really been.
I love the fact that he's the one that swoops in when they find out where Reese and the mom and the baby are being kept, and he's the one that's leading that force to come in, and that was fantastic. I was like, go. He has been on her side from day one, and he has been so reliable, and I like that about that character.
I think my bigger problem, if Gwen had phrased it the way you did, I wouldn't have had as much of an issue.
Come across
because
that way.
It comes across for her as they're going to kill my dad.
Right.
Well, you're going to kill your dad by resetting the miracle.
Well, but we know what the fate is. I think it made more sense to be with family.
Thinking it in that sense, yes, but they just did not portray that, at least through Gwen's actions.
Well, Gwen's kind of very much a nobody's going to kill my dad but me.
Yeah.
Well, she's got nobody else has the right.
Nobody's going to kill Jack but me.
God help Great Britain.
She's not killing him either. Death's
right,
just going to come.
Yeah. Well, it could be argued that she kills him. He was doing okay in the camp until they tried to get him out.
He wasn't category one. Now that's the point where, she...
He trying to load him into a truck and give him a heart attack again. That's kind of what did him in. But way too much Colin there. Episode 6. I want to talk about episode 7. I know you don't like it.
No, I don't like it.
Where are you falling on that one?
I enjoy it. I think it does a real good job. There's a great drama in it with Gwen. But I think it also does a good job of exploring why Jack is so much darker than he is on Doctor Who. Because of him always losing people, because of how long he's living. I think that's the best example.
Is this the flashback story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think this is the best example of showing why he's darker.
Other than the end?
Well, she's got him in the car. In the car. Okay. And, you know,
I guess that's where they're relaying. Remembering. That's right.
Okay. Yeah.
Because she's got the eye drives in, and they've said, we've got your kid, we've got your
Because that's your set up at the end of six.
Yeah. Yes.
When she's looking in the mirror.
Which seems odd to watch, you know, after all of the drama of episode two on the plane and the whole getting in and out of customs and the, you know, this, and we had to do this on the FBI, blah, 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 and you can't fly, and security everywhere, blah, blah, blah. And she gets back over to England, no problem, and comes back over under her real name, apparently, because they're paging her on a white phone. It's just kind of like...
Well, I think security and everything is dropped by that point.
Right.
Because it's further into the miracle.
Right. I think that was my impression, too, is that the 2 months actually helps.
That's
even before the 2 months.
That was before the 2 months.
Yeah, that's still before that. But so she lands and she gets the message that they have everybody. And then we get into episode 7. So she goes and tasers Jack, throws him in the trunk of the car.
Which I liked all that. I was fine with that. It was the whole... This story would have been a nice standalone story on its own. But here's what I gleaned out of this.
Unfortunately.
Is that Jack meets this guy, and they fall in love, which I'm fine with that. I didn't have a problem with that. He falls in love, but this guy then thinks he's the devil because he came back, takes him in, they torture him by continuing to bring him back. That we go through this whole mess just to find out that the only reason we needed this backstory is to find out that they got Jack's blood.
Well, and to set up the families.
That was it.
Unfortunately...
That was it.
I disagree.
Angelo... Unfortunately, Angelo and his family are rather unnecessary.
That's the thing. Is, I disagree. Okay, because here's,
it brought Jack to the families, yes.
But here's what makes
But then when we come back into present day in the next episode, they're... essentially useless,
other Here's than what, finding that's the morphic what makes field. It worse is then retroactively when we find out that the whole, which I'm thinking,
Angelo.
Oh, Angelo. Well, I'm thinking Angelo.
Constantinoga.
I'm thinking that Angelo must be behind this, something that they're going to tie that together. And then he's not.
He's
and
just a watcher.
And the family is. He's right. His family, Angelo's family, are pointless. The guy was just looking for immortality. I mean, sure, maybe so that he could be with Jack again, but who cares? And then it felt like you led me down this road, making me think that there was going to be some sort of payoff, and there's not. It's just, it all boiled down on the fact that...
with episode 8, not episode 7.
Well, yes. I mean, no, that's what I'm saying is retroactively, it made 7 even worse because I, again, just like the dang plane, I spent an entire episode with a bunch of crap that I didn't need that felt like filler. You could have given me enough of a backstory in 15, 20 minutes and really punched up what was going on in present day a little better and gone further with that. And again, you could have cut an entire episode out. Not that particular episode, but you could have put those elements somewhere else. It was pointless because, honestly, all it comes down to is, as Keith said, introduction to the family, where the family comes from, the three guys, and getting his blood. That's it. There's nothing more beyond that.
Disagree. Well, here's why you're wrong. Okay. Episode 7 is the most like Doctor Who of any of these episodes. Because we have an actual alien tentacle thing in a box, and we have a mission, and it's
you like it because they mention that because well, they mentioned
yeah,
that's
a huge name drop there.
There's a great fan wank moment, but that's it.
No, it's the most closely related to what has come before. It's the closest.
It felt more like Torchwood than anything else.
It felt more like Torchwood to me. It didn't feel like Doctor.
It felt more like Jack.
No,
in this really, no, I totally think it's this is Jack before he becomes.
There's shades.
The cynical, the dark Jack that you don't particularly care for.
The bouncy, excited about being on the mission. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. This is the stepping stone between the two.
Yeah, well, because we discussed this in that one. I don't remember if it was first season or second season of Torchwood that we talked about how Jack has changed, and you were not a fan of Torchwood Jack until we got to the one episode where they kind of established how long he's been bouncing around, and, you know, that he winds up back in the past and has to live through 600 years of Earth history just to get to the point where Torchwood is established, and that he's kind of bitter about it. And in my mind, that really helps.
Well, he's bounced a few times, too, because they bounced him back, and he was buried for some years.
But Jack's always been the shortcut guy. He is a time agent. He's going to steal this bomb. He's going to do the blah blah blah, and that's how he did it. He's looking for the easy out, and it not only does that not work for him, it backfires to this extent that now he's immortal and that he can live forever, and he's cursed with this being forced to take the long way around. Mm-hmm. And that's why he's got the doctor's hand in a jar, and he's got all of these things because he's looking to get back to that shortcut, and he can't do it. So we get this episode that sets all this wonderful stuff up. I love the relationship between him and Angelo. I think it's very sweet. I think it's very well written. I don't think that Angelo was looking just to, you know, cash in on him. I think they actually had that connection.
No, I think he was.
And I love the fact that they give Angelo that, you know, the bit with the rosaries that, you know,
it doesn't
stop him from making love to Jack. But he does still feel guilty about it because of his upbringing, because of, you know, everything that he's got to deal with it. His guilt. Because we've dealt a lot with Jack's guilt and his baggage. And so it's kind of nice to have that mirror to it. I think that's all wonderful and incredibly well balanced in there. I think that we get this set up and that, admittedly, Jack probably should have warned him. I mean, I would be shocked if
they're getting very close.
Somebody was shot in the head and then showed up a year later, and probably a little pissed that you let me rot in jail for a year, and you could have said something or done something, or, you know.
Yeah.
It was nice to see Jack without the blue coat for a change. I thought that was kind of cool that he went out to L.A. and whatever. Anyway, so he comes back and he's in this very conflicted state and overreacts badly. I'll give you that. And he kills him. And then all hell breaks loose, quite literally. How many? Do we have any idea how many deaths Jack went through while chained up in this butcher store? Because the one episode of Torchwood where they have the running counter, I don't think they included some of these in there. Because it seems like it's a much larger number at this point. And so it just... tough to watch over and over again. And you know he's going to come back, but still tough to watch.
Just to know, because since he feels it all still.
Yeah. And kind of the horror and revulsion on Angelo's face with that, what have I done to get to that point? And so now, okay, we're gonna get you out of here. We're going to take care of this. And Jack doesn't know that they're harvesting blood. He's just, you know, he's oblivious to that. And then I think it was a little unrealistic of Angelo to think he was going to take him back at that point.
I'll say the blood thing was brought up, and the reason why he, even if he realized when he saw them had a bottle of his blood, he knew that his blood wasn't what made him immortal. Yeah. There was nothing special about it. And he's right. There was nothing special about his blood.
Yeah.
So I can understand why he wouldn't have
considered it.
Yeah.
It's just a bad chapter. Let's turn the page and we start over. So all of that sets up Episode 8. And like I said, I love the fact that we have an alien menace and that Jack's looking at this as, well, the doctor has a companion.
Let me stop you there, because everything that you said so far is right. All of that is probably a good story. The problem is, and you're going to explain a little more about why it sets up Episode 8, is that would have been a wonderful Torchwood story. Not within the context of this. It was unnecessary within the context of this.
I think it would have been okay in the context of this had they done something different with Angelo.
Because of all of that that happened, yes, maybe, but because of all of that that happened right here, that's another element that could have been shortened and cut out. Now go on.
Okay.
Had he been one of the founding members of the families,
but that's where
it would have been fine.
I think that's why they did it the way they did it. I think they were setting everything up to get to that moment so that when we get to that cliff face and Nana Visitor shows up and says, well, Angelo Constantine, whatever his last name is, that you're going to want to come with me.
Colasanto.
Thank you. You're going to want to come with me.
They say it so much in episode 8 that I can't believe I can't remember it.
So we get to 8, and we get to the family, and we think we have now figured this out, that Angelo is behind this in some way, shape, or form. And then you find out, no, he isn't. Now, there's a part of you that, yeah, I can see being, wait a minute, what was the point of all this?
There's because, only two more episodes to go.
You know, why yet more misdirection? Why isn't Angelo part of this? It does two things. it strengthens the villainy, if you will, of the family, of the fact that they are going to cut him out of this and that he's not part of it because he has relations with men. That makes him category zero in their mind. He is not one of the worthy chosen that would be joining us in this brave new world order. Doesn't matter how old he is. Doesn't matter the fact that he's on his own figured out a good chunk of this immortality stuff. You're not included. You're not welcome here. And that sets them up as these greater villains, even though it's still shadowing left in the mist. And the other thing that it does is it kind of redeems Angelo's relationship with Jack and allows Jack to kind of forgive him for these transgressions that happened. Because if he had been the bad guy, that really would have, you know, it would have cast a huge... Because I think Jack, even to this day, still looks back on those times fondly, which is when Angelo's dying and he's kind of, you know, I think he's okay with it. Had he been the villain of the piece, Jack would have reacted that way. It would have been much harder for Jack to go through that, which maybe is better drama, I don't know. But that's the reasoning behind that. It also allows you to set up the idea of the higher overarching family business with episode 7, that we discover that they're collecting the blood, but we still can't figure out why.
Right.
So,
well, here's the thing, though.
They set up the wiping the records and everything right. from 1928.
Well, I agree with, again, now everything that you've said that works. I put the producer hat on and I go, this did not still need to be 10 episodes. This all could have been drilled down and been a lot shorter. And I think that's why episode 7 especially I don't like. And episode 8, although when Delancey shows up,
he's the best part of episode 8.
Oh, yeah, the whole episode. Episode
8. Yeah, everything goes up.
Delancey's here.
Well, in fact, everything that happens
so
at the house.
Changes, too.
Everything happens Delancey at the house, yeah. I enjoyed that. And I the latter half of the 8th episode is what I really got into, and I really started to enjoy it. And it felt like we were getting back on track, so I liked that. But again, there's that point between about halfway through episode 6 all the way to halfway through episode 8. I could have, as a producer, whittled that all down and still made it a conclusive story. And that's the problem is, again, if I could chop that out of there and make that a different story, that would have been a wonderful episode because it is everything you said about it. But the problem is for this grand story that we've got, it's more dragging out this 10 episodes that I didn't feel was necessary. And so that's where I came down on it, why I don't like it, because it's like you went way too much trying to pace this out for 10 episodes. And this
well,
is how
I,
you did.
I agree. The overall pacing of Miracle Day is off, and it's because it doesn't need to be 10 episodes. I don't know that episode 7 is necessarily the one that I would have trimmed. I think, honestly, I go the reverse. I think the latter half of 8 with these panels under the bed, which they stole
well,
from that.
I would have placed that
somewhere
else.
This just kind of felt like a...
Well, okay, we're just sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
I mean,
a
it's
lot
a cool effect
yeah.
when he creates the null field and he's explaining
there's
why they
downtime.
Can't have it. Yeah. Stealth bombers and all this kind of stuff with that kind of stuff. And you begin to realize, yeah, that's a horrible thing. You know, in and of itself, that would have made a fine episode of Torchwood.
Yeah.
We've got bigger fish to fry. There are other things going on here. The bed part of it doesn't really
factor into. I think what that does do, though, is that it shows Rex and Esther the weight of, and the viewer, especially the new viewer, the weight of Torchwood and why Torchwood has to remain such a secret and why Torchwood. It really drives home the fact because Rex and Esther still feel like, well, Torchwood's a members-only society. You guys aren't any better than we are in the CIA, blah, blah, blah. And they're still trying to equate it. You could just get that sense throughout the entire series. And then this is that one time that I think both Esther and Rex both realize
there
is a good thing.
It's difficult to see it set up because there's still so many Rex moments in particular where he's like, so what, are we talking extraterrestrial? Are we talking alien? Like, he doesn't believe in it. It's like, you lived through the 4, 5, 6 incidents. Right. You know this stuff exists. Let's not talk about Daleks and Cybermen in the streets that we would have had by this point. Let's not talk about all the other stuff. You yourself mentioned this one.
Right.
So why are you discounting it so easily? That's the one thing that I find very difficult with some of these later stories is that they tend to still treat the human population like we're the oblivious la-la-la-la nature thing. And there's only so many government cover-ups that you can buy before you get to the point that Russell T. Davies has blown all of that out of the water and said, right. Here they are, and the world knows about it.
Right.
It's like, okay, you've got to move on from there. You can't go back. So it's frustrating for me in that regard, too.
We did a lot in Series 2 and 3 of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Of resetting and saying, well, conspiracy theory, government mind control.
Yeah.
Internet rumors.
I think my bigger problem with Episode 8 is after we go through all of this, and pretty much all of it's just dropped. And the next episode, we start 2 months later, and it's a whole new issues and all new situations. A lot of this just wasn't, obviously, what happened to the plates? Jack was shot, had to go off and recuperate with Esther.
Right.
No, he stole the one piece out of it, so I assume
that ran it.
Okay. That was enough to prevent them from reverse engineering it.
I too got the impression that he was going to have to take the plates out of there.
Yeah.
Then I did catch that he took the one element out of it, and so I thought, okay, well, that's what he meant, get him and this element out of there.
It just seems all very...
Which they did.
Okay, we're done with this story. We're going to move on. Especially when you're that close to the end, more things need to be tying together instead of just going off in the left field.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Well, even going back to 6, where we get the news report of the 42nd Story Club, and we lose the one agent to it because he climbs up on the roof after seeing the blessing and throws himself off.
Right.
But it's done as a news report and move on.
Yeah.
That we don't get so much of the world building anymore. And we get at the beginning of 9, I think it is, when we get the 2 month later jump, that you kind of find out
that's right.
The economy's collapsed altogether.
Yeah.
That just, you know, what Shapiro's doing is when he's smoking, you know, the insurance companies, they're gone. You know, who are you going to insure? And it's like, again, those are the little things that I think are just so well thought out with this. Is like, wow, that's a really cool, you know, concept piece. But we've kind of gotten to the point now where it's like we're just throwing them in there because we can't build a story around it.
We've got to wrap these things up.
We've got to wrap everything up.
Yeah, agreed.
So not surprised that Gwen spends her her post-Torchwood years drug running.
Yeah.
Yep, all right, I'll buy that. And doing it in such a way that it's benefiting the neighbors,
right.
You know.
Yeah. That was kind of neat. Because it wasn't, because when it first happens, you think, oh, she's doing this all for her dad. And that seems a little selfish. And then when she gets back and she starts telling Reese about the orders. But that to me, it was, oh, she's doing it all for her dad. But then, there's still a little glimmer of Gwen. But then it's more so when you get back and then you realize that she's doing it for all these people that need it. So.
And then Oswald shows up at the house.
That blew my mind.
I know. It's like, okay, big guy with the crate. Here comes. Like, oh, Jack's coming in finally.
I thought it was Jack. I didn't
know.
I thought it was Jack as well.
And he sounds so rational. Forgive the intrusion. Blah, blah, blah. And you think to yourself, okay. Now, admittedly, picking up the baby right off the bat, probably not the best move. And Gwen, in typical measured, even response tones, hits it with a frying pan.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
Oh, I love Reese's reaction.
Oh,
to
yeah.
It. I mean, Reese is like, you can't kill him, but I can. Wow.
Is there anybody who, any doubt in anybody that Reese would have killed him?
I think the only reason he wasn't dead was because of Gwen. I think that she gave
him. And they even bring that point up when they have to take him with them.
Yeah, when he says you're stuck in this impossible situation, you got to take it with you or else.
He would do it.
Yeah.
And she's just, yep. Yeah, he would.
I love that.
Episode 9 was pretty low.
It was one of those things.
It was a lot of the moving the chessboard, so you're set up for the final episode.
You know,
for
a
penultimate,
But I'm also sort of glad that they did the surprise raid where they go in and they've hidden Dad in the cellar behind the wood, and he comes in and they've got that real tense moment that, oh, he's going to be discovered, and then he's not, and they leave. It was a nice. It was really well done in the sense that as they're kind of trying to put things together and figure out this whole, that when Torchwood all finally kind of gets there together. Well, except for Rex, who's back. But Esther and Jack are there, and Oswald and Reese and Gwen, and they're all sitting there, and they're formulating, trying to figure out what's going on. And just as Reese, you see the revelation on his face that he's got something because he's got the globe, and he's pointing to something, and he looks. And just as you think he's going to tell him because he turns to even starts to address it,
that's when the second
they come
raid.
Back in the second raid, and I thought that was really well done, put in there because I didn't expect that at that moment. And so when it happens, I thought, okay, that's great. You broke this up really well, they take him out and they have that nice moment. And
oh,
fortunately, and she didn't get any worse trouble than she did.
Well, yeah, they, yeah. You've been accused of, well, because the first raid is all you've been accused of harboring a category one. Exactly. So it's more about them. And this one is like, no, we're just coming to take him.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's registered now. You have to, he's still unregistered. It's like, well, if you nabbed him the first time, how would you know? This is a new thing that you guys have all set up.
Right.
And then the absolute agony of, here, you have to sign for him.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
the look just, on her face. Oh,
twist the knife a little bit.
See, and I kind of come down on the side of talking about carving things out to shorten the story. You could have almost done with, well, the first raid was very tense moments. I knew they weren't going to find him.
Yeah, I did too.
You could have cut that entire thing out.
I did too,
and they could have implied that they had come in here and raided before.
That's certainly true. That could have worked.
That's a way they could have cut it down.
But I liked.
I just got so tired of the dad drama.
Well, throughout the, that was one of the things that, of all the things they kept dropping and only giving hints, they really were sticking with that one. And I thought there got to be something more. Now at the end, when I think it's paid off,
it does pay off. But it's just it was just so frustrating while watching it.
But anyway, so the raid happens and totally distracts us from what's going on.
There's an app for that.
Which was a very nice moment.
Yeah, when Reese comes back and then reveals, well, it's because it's on the opposite side of here. Because they figured out Shanghai. They figured out because they were going to Shanghai, they
because
knew
of
that
the,
must
the
be
Jilly
one
Kissinger,
of the... Right, that
story.
Might have been one of the locations, and Danes was the one that kind of put them out on that one. And then when they were trying to figure out what the other one was...
And Rex came up with Buenos Aires because of the fiction writer.
But they couldn't figure out how they were connected and how, why was it these two locations. And Reese says, well, if you draw a line right through the globe, they're exactly opposites. And I was like, wow. Let's go.
And then
go, Reese.
And then I thought it was also a nice touch pointing out the FICOR logo was the same.
Yes, that was neat. And I didn't expect that
Which was a great way to tie FICOR back into it because we kind of dropped that whole idea of the company.
Agreed.
I love the bit between when the raid is happening and Jack and Oswald are kind of standing there at the window. Don't look at me. Don't look at me. Don't look at me.
Well, and they have that nice little confrontation there where Jack says, I'll turn you over right now. And he goes, you can't because then they'll know where you're at or they'll find
you. They'll wonder who you are.
Yeah. They'll wonder who you are. And then I thought, oh, yeah, stalemate. It's just so a stalemate. Neither one of them can say anything.
That's been the best thing about Oswald's character as because, you know, and we talked about this a little bit, that he seems to disappear for great chunks of the story. And then finally, as we get into these last couple of episodes here, we get to see a little bit more of kind of the true Oswald, the manipulative, can't do that because of the, the bargaining, the constant, you know, and you just, you really start to get to that deplorable, I don't like you, but you're necessary, but man, I don't like you.
Well, and then especially at the end when he's yelling with the bomb, and it's like, okay. I almost started to like you.
I did almost, and I thought the same thing.
I almost thought, they're starting to redeem this guy.
But thank you for driving home the monster again. I loved that fact. That, well, it was almost still a redeeming quality in the sense that it was the one gain for him, but he did follow through all the way to the end so that it, I mean, he was still, the deal was still met. And so... You have to give him that, even though at the very end, I mean, it was still a selfish act.
Yeah.
The character is the best thing about this.
I got cold chills when when she's saying you'll go to hell, and he goes, "That's where all the girls go." You know, I'm coming for you, Susie. You better start running. It's like,
and just that exact moment, we're like, "Yeah, okay."
Yeah, it's just from monster to monster. I loved it. Yeah. I loved the journey. It was just. That's the best part of this whole series was Oswald Danes and that storyline, that character.
And I don't know if anybody but Bill Pullman could have pulled it off.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of people that could have. Do I want anybody else? Do I now want to have seen anybody else in that role? Absolutely not, because he did it phenomenal.
Hey, don't get me wrong. The I'm coming for you, Susie. You better start running. Doesn't quite measure up to "We will not go quietly into the night" as far as Bill Pullman's speeches go. But it was pretty good.
So I was also taken by surprise with the Rex transfusion.
I'd forgotten all about it, quite honestly. It hit me all over again. I'm like, that's why it's like, are we not done with this yet?
So I thought...
Shouldn't he be healed by now?
Yeah.
So I thought another... I don't know what to feel about that, because I think while it was a good plot device and it almost seemed one of those, almost like the antidote from the second. It was almost like, wouldn't you have to be the same blood type? Wouldn't you have to do, I mean, it seems like there was a lot more
well,
that would
what
have happened.
What was nice was the line drop of, if it were any other day, I would have died. But because
well,
of the miracle,
I suppose
I
that's
lived.
True. Yeah, I suppose that's true.
That line fixes the entire
okay.
thing.
Well,
for
you know,
me.
If cancer is fixed,
yeah.
because you know, cancer cells are
fixers,
normal,
yes, cancer cells
immortal.
Are dead. Yeah.
Now they're dead. Transfusion, I suppose, doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't yeah. matter which blood is pumping through your system because your body's not going to reject
it. As long as it's
it.
Pumping
that's
something.
True. That's true.
Well, and in some cases not.
Oh, yeah.
But did it seem like a convenient
oh, yeah.
device? Okay.
Well,
so
the entire,
that's what I'm getting
the entire
too.
Blood thing felt like a convenient plot device to me.
Well, here's the
way
thing
back
is,
from their gathering his blood. It's like,
okay, but I like the idea. I struggled with that a little bit when I started, but the more I thought about it, I thought, I like the fact that Jack's blood still, there was nothing special about it. Metaphysically.
Or biologically.
Well, that's what I mean, biologically. Metaphysically, it was because of this particular situation that we are in. And this
because
particular,
of the blessing.
And because of what the blessing is and what it wants and needs, the blood was important. But it wouldn't. His blood would never have been able to cure cancer. His blood never would have been able to do anything practical. It's just normal blood. He is the anomaly. But in this situation,
it's not
Khan's
super
sense.
Blood.
Exactly, it makes sense. So now,
you have
I
issues
liked
with the
that.
Blessing.
I like that.
I kind of think you're building up
the
to
blessing
that.
Is the thing that I can't wrap my brain around.
Well, it's because we don't get a good explanation. Because
I think that's it too.
And
yeah.
And the first time watching it, I didn't like it because they didn't explain it at all.
Yeah,
I picked up a bit more of the. Well, it could be this, this, and this. You don't know. Nope. And the what little explanation we got, and the fact that nobody knew what it was, I was more okay with it.
Well, and they
that
dropped.
It's just this thing. It's a terrestrial thing that was in the middle of the earth.
Well, they name dropped the Solarians.
They
yes,
the Solarians.
The, which I didn't get the first time watching.
I got Solarians. I didn't get
Rachnid.
Whatever the aliens,
Rachnos, yeah,
the queen that was would have the spider queen.
I love that he launches into this diatribe of how he's going, how he's explaining, how he's making sense of it, and then she says,
"You don't know, do you?
You don't know, do you?" And he goes, "No, not a clue." And I thought, "Oh, that's Captain Jack right there. That was that. Oh, he's invoking what he knows about terrestrial beings on Earth and how they all of this could be related.
All information that he got from
nothing.
The doctor.
Yeah.
He name drops
yeah,
the doctor
exactly.
in there too.
I got nothing.
I got nothing.
I was like, wow, that was so cool. Yeah. So the blessing is still.
They talk about these morphic fields.
Yes.
The idea that, you know, this group of animals over here evolves and learns something new. And 10,000 miles away, this group of animals picks up the same habits.
Same thing. Yeah. Not and being separated.
But being completely separated. That's kind of what a morphic field does. Well, the blessing is this morphic field that extends through the whole planet and is in symbiosis with humanity that's keeping things kind of balanced and in check. And
that's how they explain it.
That's how they explain
it.
Yeah. Here's the kicker, all right? I've done a lot of thinking on this. Going back to Captain Jack's first appearance, we've got this warship, medical ship, this ambulance.
Oh, my gosh.
Full of nanites.
Everybody lives.
Does this help you?
Oh, my gosh.
It's the same story. It's the same story from The Empty Child. Instead of nanites that went and looked at this pattern
yeah.
of this broken kid
oh,
with a
yeah.
gas mask,
it's
they fed it Jack's immortal
yeah.
blood.
Yeah.
I think,
and it reversed the pattern and said, okay, that's what everybody's supposed to be like.
Gosh. I didn't think of it in that framing, but yet, watching a second time, I did pick that up.
So Russell T. Davies stole this from Stephen Moffat.
He really did.
Wow. Wow, mind blown. That's you're right. The parallels are very, very. Wow. Yeah.
It's a nice little balance for Captain Jack to go out on in a way. beginning
now,
of the end.
That still doesn't allow me to wrap my brain around the blessing.
How is this thing here?
Yes, what it is.
Where it came from, et cetera. But
and an unfortunate. I don't know. I wasn't impressed with the visual of it, quite honestly.
No.
That it's a big gaping chasm that sucks things in.
Well, and tried to make it look organic. I think it would have been better if it hadn't looked organic.
I can't say what I thought it looked like on the show. I'm sorry. I'm going to go there. I can't say what it looked like.
It's inappropriate.
Yeah. I was a little disturbed by that. Yeah. But
well, if anybody's going to go there, it would be Jack. Sorry.
So this all happens. They manage to reverse. And we kind of fall back into
the polarity.
They reverse the polarity. We fall back into this the stereotypical sci-fi trope, in my opinion, is we've got a clever plot device. Everything works out in the end. We didn't touch much on Charlotte being this, the mole within
Well, we
CIA.
Got the bomb, and we don't get any fallout from the bomb. We don't know who survived that.
That's one of the things is that kind
not
of bothered
many,
me.
Apparently.
Again, the one guy didn't. I finally felt like Delancey was not stunt casting until we just blow him up. And then I thought, I finally liked the stunt cast character, and you blew him up.
Unfortunately, it comes across as, well, we got to finish this. Bam, we're going to kill him.
Yeah. That's really what it felt like. And Charlotte gets away, and I thought, okay, I don't know where we're going with this, but okay. Which sets up the very end at Esther's funeral. Unfortunately, Esther doesn't make it.
And nice parallels between her and Rex when the paramedics are working on both of them, and they keep flashing to one or the other. And you really kind of get that sense that one or both could, you know. Because when Rex gets up after the blood
and does the bit,
and then, you know, and then he collapses.
Okay.
And then he gets back up and hucks the guy over the railing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, he made it. And then he collapses again. It's like, oh.
No, here's the thing is, that's where the big stinger finale was telegraphed to me.
Really?
Because when he does that, and then he gets up, and he does that again, and we've already revealed that he's got Jack's blood in him, suddenly I'm having a problem with Jack's blood isn't special. Because then I'm thinking, okay, this is kind of weird. Now, you can argue that the blessing gave him the immortality.
It did.
It did, yeah.
But I suppose because Jack's blood was there in him and switched it. Okay.
Essentially, it was Jack's DNA.
Going back to the nanite analogy, that it okay, so this is the only mortal now on planet Earth.
So it resets
and it's his
everything
blood,
again.
And okay. Rex is doing the same thing.
Gotcha.
So they're both
if he would
mortal
like,
blood.
If he would, aside from getting like bone marrow, if they did a DNA test on Rex,
okay.
Like blood test, it would
that
be
helps,
Captain Jack.
That helps satisfy.
And so the blessing went, okay, reverse it, but
reverse
now you two are reversed as well.
Because they're on each side. Okay, now, that being said, when he kept getting up, I kept thinking, oh, has he changed now? Is he immoral? And so it's already formulating and percolating in my head. And it's not. And then when it happens at the end and he gets shot, it wasn't that. I think you're supposed to have that, oh, gosh, he almost made it till the end. But when
welcome to Torchwood.
Yeah, when he yells, then I went, I already don't like this character, and now you're going to got to give me a reason to carry his character on into the rest of Torchwood. But
you know what struck me about that scene? Russell T. Davies really likes to use the word "what" in those situations.
Yes,
that was very tough.
What?
Did he write last one?
Yeah, he co-wrote it with Jane.
The other thing that I liked about the families, despite the fact that this is an area that I wish we'd had a little more backstory on as to what their
motivations were. Well, I think that's the idea
is
you
were.
Set the families up for season 5 also.
Yeah.
And we would get more. And
which,
because
now
we didn't. We didn't explore the families. We really didn't know what they were up to other than they had this bigger plan and this was the first step of it.
There's a reason, right? Yeah, because of the way we left it.
So. And it feels like, okay, yeah, we're going to continue the story.
But
unfortunately, we don't get to.
As you were pointing out, that they're trying to justify what they're doing to the planet and to humanity, that's what makes a good villain. In my mind, a good villain is never one that's evil just for the sake of being evil. It's not the snidely whiplash, mustache twirling. It's somebody who, in their own mind, believes they're doing what's right.
Right
now,
right.
What they wind up doing is reprehensible. Oswald is kind of in that same vein, that whatever wiring is messed up in his head, he sees this as divine providence, right, or, you know, his, yeah, right to be able, right, to do that. And the families look at that as, we're making the world better. The system's broken. The system doesn't work. We're going to change it and make it a better place. And so that's like, okay, it's still wrong, but, you know, I like the fact that within their logic that what they're doing makes sense to them.
Yeah.
And I think that's effective.
So overall, I think Miracle Day, while I had a lot of complaints and it definitely could have been cropped down shorter, overall the story is good. The plot is pretty well driven and good. The characters are good, with the exception of some issues I had with some.
Rex.
But overall, needed to be shorter. There was some stunt casting. But here's what it boils down to is, this has never been my type of science fiction. I think this is why I'm pretty lukewarm on Torchwood all the way. Because while I don't mind short morality tales, Torchwood has always been a morality tale from day one.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's really less...
Or is it an immorality tale?
Well...
Immortality tale.
Yeah. It's always been a morality tale, and it's not that... That's why it's not Doctor Who, is because Doctor Who is always about hope. It's always about... even though we don't always have heroes, it's always about, heroism. It's the hero story quite frequently. Torchwood, while it has shades of that and tries for that, it's always morality is the overarching theme. And so I don't fault them for that, because it's a good road to go down, and it's a different type of storytelling. But overall, I think I get a little tired of that. And I think that's why I've gotten tired of Torchwood. I'm ready for it to be done and over, is because I really feel like we just continue to wiggle down that stream of what kind of morality tale can we deal with now. And I'm afraid you're going to run dry
if it were to come back for a fifth season, I think it would need to do something very different.
Yeah. And Miracle Day was a good attempt. I said this last week. Miracle Day was a good attempt of trying to reach that bar that set with Children of Earth. And I think they tried. I appreciate the attempt. It's just it just didn't quite get there. So
I think had it been shorter and addressed some of the concerns that we had with the pacing with different pieces of it, I think it would have come close. I think it's an interesting enough setup that it could, and it maybe not. I mean, you know, let's put children in danger. That's always good for drama.
But it nearly got there.
You know, it did. Now, here's a question that I want to know is, it is a Doctor Who spinoff, legitimately, and we have to accept at face value that the events of Torchwood, Children of Earth, and Miracle Day do happen in the same universe as the events of Doctor Who.
He's going to revisit this. It's the same question he asked during Children of Earth.
Does it still fit?
Yeah, it fits.
Does it still make sense that the Doctor could come back to Earth post-Miracle Day and not... What the hell happened? I leave you guys for three days and look at the mess
you
made.
That's what you said. I mean, exactly. So that's word for word what you said about
scale,
it is a bigger scale.
Children of Earth.
Does it still fit? Because there are a lot of people that don't. There are a lot of people that believe that it's diverged too much from the core universe.
I think it has to. And I think the only reason it has to is because they continue to do the name drops. They continue to make the references. I think you have to accept that, this is...
Yeah.
Yeah, the Doctor's fully aware of that. This is where this is part of Earth's future. This is part of Earth's timeline. I don't think he would have come back and said, "I don't what happened here." I almost think that he'd come back with the foreknowledge of, "I'm glad I wasn't here while this happened. Yeah. You figured it out."
Or maybe that's why he wasn't there, because he knew it had to run its course. Do you want them? Not necessarily to acknowledge, but just would a name drop be any giddy? Because I don't know about you guys, I got giddy every time they name drop the Doctor in this.
I don't want to backwards.
If Clara or somebody in a new episode coming up in season 8 mentioned, "God, this is like Miracle Day all over again."
I don't need it. Don't want it.
Okay.
If she did, so be it. But do I need it or do I want it? No.
Just curious.
I did notice in episode 7 that the Trickster reference, which was kind of neat.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, the parasite thing that was in the box,
right,
was part of the Trickster's brigade.
Oh, I totally missed that.
Which is, of course, more Sarah Jane focus. Well, it was part of Who, and now part of Torchwood. It was much more Sarah Jane.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, it was Russell getting his...
yeah.
Getting his...
And you know who wrote that episode?
In there. Russell.
Jane.
No, was Jane Espenson. Yeah. Oh, well, she wrote for Sarah Jane, too, though, didn't she?
Did she? I don't think so.
I thought she wrote one episode in there.
If she did, I missed it.
I may be wrong.
I think she needs to write more for Who.
Well, yeah. I thought she wrote one in there as well.
Jane, come work on the other side of the pond. They need you. They need you on Who. Let's talk about Web of Lies.
Oh, I forgot we had to do that. Yeah.
I don't know that I honestly have much to say about it. I like web comics. I think they're fun. I didn't have fun with this one. It started off kind of interesting.
From what I understand of it also, doing a bit more research, had we had downloaded it when it came out and as the show went on, there would also be like little puzzles that you had to do to continue the story, which I think could have been is an aspect of just watching it that you lose.
Interactively, it would have been
I think it would have
better.
Been, I think it would have improved it if it was interactive.
I don't know. I think if I had to unlock a puzzle to get to the next segment of story and then got it unlocked and got to the end, I'd have been like, you made me do that for that. I'd have felt like Ralphie with his Ovaltine puzzle.
Did anybody feel like Jack and
that story
Gwen's
story
was unnecessary?
Unnecessary and almost undercut.
I mean, it was almost,
what was going on in
yeah,
Miracle
It
Day.
Was almost the reason why they could call it Torchwood is because they had to put Jack and Gwen in it. And I agree with Keith. I think it sort of undercuts everything going on in Miracle Day, especially by doing the whole memory loss thing at the end.
Yeah.
And so it seemed like seemed like more of an excuse to kind of remind you that the blood is going to be important. And that's really the only that's happening on that side. On the other side of it that's happening is something that was very uninteresting to me was the whole
the brother, sister,
taking over, you know, trying to figure out where the...
And I'm sorry, Elijah Dukes is not a very good voice actor. She was
The character wasn't written well either.
There were a lot of voices in there that I mean, Jack and Gwen were very energetic and a lot of the voices were just...
Well,
I'm with you. I like web comics. I think that they can be done well, but I think they can also be done poorly, and I don't think this one was done well.
I don't think it was done well at all. The only thing that I can say for the Jack-Gwen story arc in the blood, it was a little shocking to kind of see the lengths to which they went to get...
Yeah.
They threw Jack out of the airplane.
Well,
like, oh, man. And the guy even acknowledges, we couldn't even find all of you, and yet here you are.
Yeah. Well, and that felt very Torchwood-y to me. Not part of Miracle Day, like as its own sort of thing, which I think is what they were getting at, because clearly their part of this story all happened long before.
Yeah,
it's like
2007.
I think it said 2007
well,
at the intro
and Holly
cut,
pointed out that she's talking to Tosh when she's trying to find Jack, and so...
But the only thing that, in my mind, the only thing that did to kind of lend anything to Miracle Day... is it kind of explains that they didn't harvest all the blood from Jack in episode 7 in the flashback.
Right.
That they did get, once they kind of figured out what...
Well, that's why there are vats of blood and not just...
And I think what it is that we, you know, so we find the blessing, we bring Jack's blood in, we experiment with it a little bit, we kind of go, oh, now we know what to do.
That was the protocol.
Now we need to go get Jack, and we need to go get his blood. Yeah. And so they did all of this, and they had all that, so that they could then gear up for when they would be ready.
Right.
Okay. Other than that,
the whole Holly storyline didn't really matter either, other than setting up the vats of blood.
Right. That's what it comes down
to. There was really nothing in her story arc that, oh, there's a key and there's this and there's a blah, blah, blah.
And some of the logic jumps she made were ridiculous.
Oh.
It didn't make any sense. This says this must be yellow.
That's because you only got 20 minutes to tell your story, and only half of that because you've got to do the Jack and Gwen part of it.
It was like watching Sherlock on crack. 2+2 equals chair.
It's like
somebody
not knowing how to write Sherlock.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the interesting thing is, again, it's Jane.
Yeah, Jane wrote this one.
With somebody else. So, but this is not a good example. No. This is more like Jane writing Once Upon a Time, which I don't like.
Well, it probably, if you... could have gone an hour to flesh it out, you might have been able to do it a little better. Again, when you're condensing it down to webcomic form, which not only is... I'm saying you had 28 minutes to tell a story, but you still had to even, like, dissect it so that you could tell it in short stints, you know?
That kind of...
Not only are your hands tied, now they're tied behind your back.
Who could have done this? Jenny Tartakovsky.
Yeah, Jenny probably could. Yeah. But he'd have done it more with visualizations and less dialogue.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a webcomic. I'm all right with that. Doesn't need to be talky.
I agree.
Like he said, in fairness, maybe if we'd watched it as the events of Miracle Day were unfolding on TV and gotten these little glimmers, we'd have felt more like it was more integral, or that at least we were being given a little bit more of a piece to the pie.
It's
especially
like
coming to
the,
this after you've seen the story, which we had. You know, I definitely don't feel
you did too.
This is what I equated to. I read the Watchmen graphic novel when I was a kid. I was like in high school or something. Well, I absolutely loved it. Went fantastic. And I absolutely, a lot of people dislike the pirate story that's going on in between. Or the shipwreck guy. Okay.
The Black Freighter.
The Black Freighter, that's it. So, a lot of people, but I always liked it because I liked the parallels that were being drawn between the events of what was happening in the main story and what was happening with the story that was going on in the Black Freighter. And so I always liked that, and I thought it was real well done. So I was super excited when they were doing the movie, but I kept thinking, how are they going to incorporate the Black Freighter into this movie and not make it a six-hour-long movie? And I wondered how he was going to do it. And when I saw the movie and realized they had cut the Black Freighter stuff out altogether, I thought,
it's
fine. It's still good. It's good. Well, that's just it. I thought the movie's fine. It was still good. The Black Freighter stuff really just kind of added spice to where there was already a good story. I didn't necessarily need it. Then I was excited with the fact that I saw that there was a motion comic made for it that you could watch. And I went, oh, okay, that's cool. Now, I don't have the DVD, so I don't know if you can intercut it.
I think there was supposed to be an Ultimate Edition that would allow you to do that.
I watched the motion comic outside of just as its own story. It doesn't work. It's not interesting. It's done just like it is in the book, in the graphic novel.
See, I didn't understand it until I saw the motion comic.
Out of context and without the interactivity, it was like pointless. It's just this. It's this tragic story. It's really all it boils down to, and it's not as interesting as it was in. So I have a feeling
that's
probably the key to that. Is if I had been doing this in between the episodes as we were watching them, because that was week to week, right? Do I remember this right?
Yeah,
yeah.
We weren't getting this 5 days or 10 days. We got it week to week.
Week to week,
and the motion comic probably came down each week as you were watching the. Okay, I think if I might have enjoyed it more if it had been a piece of this. But when you separate the two out, then they don't work together.
I think having watched Heroes and read the webcomic that came with it when it was airing, and how little, like, that's what I more compare it to. Did you guys do that at all?
I've got the two trade paperbacks of the Heroes comics, which have some of those.
Yeah, I think they added more to those, though.
And
But they rarely, I think the only thing they really tied in from the comic to the to Heroes was Stana Katic's character, which was just a brief show up and leave in Heroes, but she had this bigger arc.
Is she the one that could control, not electronics, but...
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Okay.
Beckett.
Yes. Because that was the best part of that. It was like, oh, this tiny little character that did nothing in the show had this huge back arc, which was awesome. Why didn't you show that on TV?
But I read this comic, and I was like, oh, wait, yeah, I'm going to see it. They're going to flesh out stuff, and it was that little of a connection. I was like, eh. And that's how I felt
so
about this.
That worked opposite then of this.
Yeah.
But were you doing it in between Heroes? It didn't work.
See, and for me it did, but that's because I came way late to the party for Heroes and came even later for the comic book.
I think...
That kind of works in its reverse, though. So.
Yeah.
I think for me, this would have been more like the Heroes instance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where it would have been like, really? That's what this was all for? Whatever. And it was like... After the first graphic novel would have been finished.
You didn't even burn once.
So. Yeah, I didn't continue with the comics, so I was like, it's not tying in. I don't care about any of these characters. Yeah.
Well, I, for one, would still like to see more Torchwood. I'd still want a season 5. If it ends here, it ends here.
Well,
it's a good ending, I guess.
I guess I'm ready to be at the finish line. Does that mean if they did another series of Torchwood, would I not watch it? No, I'll probably watch it, but I don't know.
I would almost rather have really another series of Torchwood to finish it instead of having a somewhat cliffhanger or unresolved plots.
Maybe that's the only reason that I feel like I would go on is because.
If this had been more of a concrete ending, more like Children of Earth was, I would have been okay with it ending here, but I kind of would like to see it go on and get these issues resolved.
It does make me wonder what the family's up to. I disagree, though. If I was in Julie Kitzinger's shoes, I totally would have gone with this guy, just from the standpoint that anybody who has the gall, the willpower, and the means to end the world in the way that they did, keep your enemies close, your friends. I want to be on that side, just from the standpoint of not being against them.
And that's how they should explore it, if they do go on with her character.
Well,
I hope they don't.
Idea that she can't do anything else at this point.
Yeah.
She's unwanted and whatnot.
Going back to what you said last week about her character and how inept she is at her job, and then the guy shows up and says, "We really enjoy what you're doing," and we all went, "What was she doing?" I still felt all the way to the end that they've brought her to Shanghai. They're gonna let her see the blessing, and I'm still thinking, what kind of resume have you given them? And then she has that confrontation with that little nerd guy in the restaurant, and she fails. And then she does what she's done best, spinning things in her favor, which she's never made anybody look good in this entire thing but herself. And they still want her, and I think that's the only reason is because she's the only person on the planet that has pulled the wool over the family's eyes. That's it. That's the only reason.
That's the only thing I could come up with, is that she's apparently so good. When he says, "You're a storyteller," I was like, well, yeah, no,
she's
why?
She's so good at telling her own story, yeah.
I can excuse the ineptness of the character, because I also recognize that the creators needed her as a character to fill in some of the gaps.
Well, I think so, too.
So it's kind of like...
There needed to be...
Could she have been a better character?
She needed to be stronger, though, if you're going to do that.
She is a slightly larger plot device than the gun guy.
That's a good point.
I mean, really. Not much. And I'm sorry, this is going to sound really horrible, but the two greatest Julie Kissinger moments are when Oswald beats the crap out of her and when Gwen beats the crap out of her.
That was a great fight in the elevator.
Okay, get her.
Fell down in the explosion there at the end, and I thought, oh, good, they finally killed her off. And then she shows up later, and I thought, oh, come on.
And then after that big knockdown, drag-out fight, Gwen still is like, come on, Joey, come on. Just leave her.
It was fine.
Let her die.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It was no love loss for me, but I liked the fact that there was still that glimmer of Gwen.
Yeah.
The compassion in Gwen. So
anybody running in them shoes deserved to get caught in that explosion.
All right, what's coming
up? If ever there was an expression of you Americans are all the same, always overdressing for the wrong occasions, it's Julie Kissinger.
All right, what's coming up on the schedule, Sean?
All right, next week, this Friday, for Friday Night Who, we are finishing The Web of Fear. Ooh. Can't wait to get into
you
that.
You said that, and my first thought was, no, we finished Web of Lies.
Yes, we did. Web of Fear.
In my head, that was the same. And I thought, well, are you trying to pull a trick on me? Oh.
So no, Julie Kissinger, you're sharp. I can see that.
No.
So we finish that, and then we begin next week's Epiversary 175. Wow. with the Adversary Archive, Part 1 on the Great Intelligence, in which we will be covering the Snowmen, the Abominable Snowmen.
I've been wanting to do this for nearly a year. You guys really?
And the Web of Fear.
Excited for this.
So, and of course, we've already reviewed the Snowmen, so we'll be probably focusing most of our discussion about the Abominable Snowmen and Web of Fear, because it'll have our official review of that. Mm-hmm. And once again, Abominable is not available, unfortunately lost to the mists of time, but there are...
Recons.
I keep wanting to call it it's a recon.
3 weeks ago when we were talking about this, I kept calling it retcons. Retcons. Recons. That's a difference.
There's Torchwood gas available. so you've got the audio and the pictures or the novelization.
I'm going to try to tackle this week.
BBC did release an audiobook format of
it. Oh, did they?
Of it.
Oh, there's an audiobook?
I think it's read by Patrick Troughton's son. Somebody with the last name Troughton.
Is it... what's his name from
I closed
Midnight?
My computer. I would have looked it up. What was his name?
The professor. It's Troughton's son. What's his
name? I don't know.
I didn't think he had Michael Troughton's last name, though.
Mm-hmm. Michael Troughton.
Maybe it was read by Michael Troughton.
Well, because his other son is the David Prince Trout. In David is the one in what's the same
I'm pulling
guy?
These names out of
no,
ether.
No, it is. I think it is David Trout. He was the same guy that was in the Peladon story.
Oh yeah, the blonde king.
Right.
Yeah.
He was, and then he was the professor in Midnight. So yeah, that's one of his sons. The other one, I think the other one's just a writer. I don't think he's an actor. So he does have two sons though, from two different wives, I believe.
So that's next week, and then the following week is the Bells of St. John for Friday Night Who.
I'm sorry. So I was going to springboard off of what he was saying about. There's also the audio, which this is what I did the last time I did this, is there's also a BBC audio version that is just the soundtrack or the voice track from the series with the linking narration, and that is done by. That might even been maybe that's what you're talking about.
Maybe I'm trying to find out.
But it's the audio track from the stories, and they're all released in audio. And then there's somebody in between. Oh, and I think it's Frasier. I think is explaining what's going on. Between.
So kind of a condensed version of it. Then
it's not even a condensed version. It's the actual story. But you instead of seeing it with telesnaps. With no explanation.
Oh, okay. Because it's
narration
completely audio.
Between explaining okay. what's. It's like sometimes you would catch these on TCM late at night. They're the the hearing impaired. Occasionally, you can go to a movie theater and without seeing, they have a little a thing in that you put your ear and it explains what's going on the screen at the time, so that visually impaired people can. I said audio impaired, but visually impaired people can enjoy a film. It explains what's going on the screen. It's the same concept of that. It's somebody filling in the gaps so you can actually listen to the story and get a picture of what's going on as well. I did that most recently, listening to that audio and then watching the one, I think there's only one, maybe there was two, existing episode. And that was pretty easy for me because as I explained a long time back, it's really hard for me to watch telesnaps of something. And in fact, I think the BBC on their website at one point, they did that audio with telesnaps that you could watch on the web as well. So if that's still available out there, that might be an option to go. So
there are some options there.
Yeah.
Bells of St. John next week for Friday Night Who, followed by the second half of our Adversary Archive on the Great Intelligence, which we will be covering Downtime. The Bells of St. John and The Name of the Doctor. Now, again, we've already reviewed Bells of St. John and Name of the Doctor, so I imagine we'll be spending most of our discussion on Downtime, which is
very difficult to get.
Very difficult to get a hold of.
Unfortunately, I think I don't think it's on DVD. I think you can
it's
only
just
get
a VHS,
VHS
copy, from what I've been able to determine.
There are digital copies out there online. We don't encourage anybody pirating anything, but I just be aware that's an avenue. And there is a novelization.
It's
one of
the
Virgin. New adventure novelizations called Downtime, and it is the story.
And then, so there's that. And then the schedule is posted up through the beginning of June on the website. If you haven't already seen that, it includes a pair of Peter Davidson stories that are coming up. It includes some Big Finish stuff. It includes a couple ebooks. So go there and follow along.
Terrific. Is there anything else you guys wanted to bring up this week? We need to discuss?
I don't think so.
Obviously, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Vortex John, at Vortex Keith, at Vortex Kent Glenn. At Travel Vortex is our Twitter handle because you can't have a very long one.
Yeah.
We learned years ago. We're on Facebook. Go there. We're on Google Plus. You can go to our feedback page and find links to all of these locations. So be sure to follow us on the other venues as well.
And Tumblr.
Tumblr, Michelle.
And I still need to get Michelle those photos.
Michelle administers
I'm sorry, our Michelle. Page, so. I've not been a very good. Yeah.
And then we also are on Goodreads. We have a group, the Traveling the Vortex book club.
With the school and everything, I haven't even delved into Crooked World. I feel so I'm out of the group. But I get the updates that, did you know there's this discussion going on? And my phone notifies me. And it's so bizarre, in a way, to get these little notifications and read these conversations that are going on from people that I'm not familiar with. They haven't written into the show. They're not, maybe they're listeners. I don't know. It's not people that we normally have.
I think we have some that are, and I think we've even got a couple that aren't.
But there's a couple of them that are not, you know, doing that. But they're having this very animated discussion back and forth about the Doctor Who book. And we kickstarted that Well, Chrissy Kickstarter. But just the fact that we were responsible for that, even though we're not...
Actually...
Robert Kickstarted it.
Credit where credit is due, absolutely.
Ran with it.
Robert's Kickstarter. But just, it's just such a surreal moment to know that... but it's so far removed, and yet not.
Yeah.
It's just cool. It's cool and weird, but it's cool.
I would agree.
So I hope everybody's enjoying it, and I hope to be able to get in and take advantage of it.
I agree.
I'm so far behind.
And unfortunately, I haven't engaged in much discussion. I've talked a little bit. I plan to go on there and kind of give some of my views on it. And the problem is I didn't reread it recently, and so it would all be recall. And also, I wrote a review back at the beginning of the month that's on there as well that I probably should just link to so that I don't have to kind of double tread and try to focus on some of the things I didn't hit on the review. But my review is there if anybody wants to read it.
Well, I love that.
And I haven't had enough time to read it.
I love that they're breaking down which character is, you know, represented by which, you know, real world anime. Mm-hmm. This particular one is the Wile E. Coyote of the group, and that this particular one is the Dirk Dastardly.
But the pig is both. Somebody brought this up, and it didn't. It occurred to me, but it is. It didn't. I really wasn't that obvious to me that the pig character is actually Porky Pig and Elmer Fudd. And so there's some like double billing here that they've kind of morphed, you know, two characters into one, which is kind of interesting too. So the discussion's really brought up some great interesting points that I find very entertaining. I'm glad we're doing this. I'm a little sad because I know what the next one is going to be. One that I've already, because it tied, and Chrissy said we're going to do one this month and one next month. She said what it is.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, Crooked World and Earthworld tied, so.
Oh, Earthworld.
Earthworld's next.
Which one's Earthworld?
It's You Were Gone That Week, too. Or You Were Gone Just That Week, I suppose, yeah. You weren't gone when I did Crooked World, but you were gone when I reviewed. And you did Harvest Time that week?
Yeah, Harvest. That's the most recent one you read.
Oh, that's the one from Hawaii.
Eighth Doctor story takes place on an amusement planet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if you get a chance...
I should go back and listen to our review of that one.
Maybe don't listen to the review and read the book. Yeah. On both the stories that we did that week, we didn't spoil the ending because we felt both...
You read Pirate Loop when I read...
Oh, that's
Carver's
right, that's right.
We both read Eighth Doctor stories that month.
You're absolutely right. You're
Trading
right.
Futures is the one I read.
Trading Futures was the one, and I read the Pirate.
How many book reviews have you guys done? I feel like I'm way out of the loop on this.
We do book reviews every time you're gone.
I'm not gone all that much. I'm not on holiday
Hawaii, and then it was Galley.
And then Galley. We did... Yeah, Galley was the one we didn't spoil. Crooked World I did spoil on. Yeah.
Well, I remember Crooked World. I was here for that
Earthworld
one.
Earthworld spoiled on, too.
No, you were here for... Or, I'm sorry. Earthworld.
Oh, okay.
You weren't here for Earthworld. That was Hawaii. That's right. I was misremembering. I did spoil it. So, yeah, don't go back and listen to the review until after you've listened to Crooked... Or after you've read Earthworld.
Okay.
I feel like you guys have read so many books
that it's like, I know I'm not that
well,
far
you've,
behind.
Well, there's been two situations that you've been gone that we did book reviews, so.
Three total.
What was the other one?
Wasn't there another one?
I was gone one time.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
And you were gone one time and we did book reviews.
Right.
Yeah.
I hadn't missed an episode until Hawaii.
Right, and then you missed another one. Well, you still
maybe
did.
That's what I'm thinking of.
You missed for Galley, though.
I think I'm thinking you were gone for Disney.
You were going to be gone longer. Yeah.
Disney, because of the way the days worked, that they were backloaded instead of front-loaded, or however that happened. Instead of making everybody wait, we decided that's what it was.
Because 2 years ago, you went
early.
This time, you stayed the vacation stuff late. Yeah. All right, well, let's move on. If that's going to do it for this week, until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.